Welcome back to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast. We strip away stainless steel and we look at real people, the game-changing ideas, innovations shaping the food service equipment industry and hospitality sector. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. And today we're doing something a little bit different. We're not in a studio. We're actually in a meeting room in an NHS hospital in Salisbury. So if you hear any background noises, it's because we're in a real environment. We're not in a soundproof studio. Already this morning, we've had an opportunity to walk around the hospital catering department, have a look at everything that's going on. And joining us in this podcast is Paul Schaffer. He's the catering manager of the hospital, and they prepare over 500,000 meals a year, and they've just won the Digital Innovation Award. I'm also joined by the managing director from Wescadisc and Dave Glover, who's the UK and Ireland country manager. So anyway, you've heard enough of me. Let's get on and welcome Paul to the show. Paul, welcome to Kitchen Curiosity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for hosting us here. So just really for the listeners' benefit, can you take us back to kind of, you know, you're in catering, but when you left school, is that what you wanted to do? Or was it something different?
I'm going to start showing my age now, aren't I? But yeah, so my journey started around 40 years ago. So I left school and I wanted to be a chef. I got into catering. Did 2 years at the college, but after that I'd left college and then I started doing various cash in hand jobs on building sites and things like that, which was quite common back then in those days.
Yeah.
But after a few years away from catering, I knew I wanted to get back into it properly.
Okay.
A job came up at Salisbury Hospital as a catering assistant. Things were much simpler then. I came in for the job on a Friday. They said you can start on a Monday. You never get that anymore.
No.
And I've been here ever since.
Well, she started as a catering assistant.
I started as a catering assistant.
So really, like,
because I've been
on the shop floor.
Yeah, because I've been at catering for so long. You know, I just felt like I needed to just get back into catering, you know, job, you know, and try and work my way up, I suppose. That was the main idea.
And so you did. So you sort of worked your way through the...
Well, I've been fortunate throughout my career to have some great managers and mentors who saw something in me and gave me opportunities to grow.
Mm.
One person in particular, Ian Robinson, he's my boss, he's soon to retire, had a huge influence on me. His passion for NHS catering really rubbed off, and that's what has stayed with me ever since.
And here you produce over 1,500 meals a day, I think, you know, for patients, staff, visitors.
Yeah.
Different allergies, you know, dietary requirements. Can you talk us through a bit of the logistics of running a hospital? Because obviously you've got the ward activity, you've got the restaurant and the staff and, yeah, some out places as well, outbuildings.
It's a great question because the reality is it is more complex than it used to be. We've come a long way, certainly since I've been in this role. The scale has always been there, but the level of detail and responsibility has increased hugely. Today, we're not just producing over 1,600 meals a day. We're managing a wide range of dietary needs, allergens, service times, critical requirements all at once. For example, allergen management is a big one.
Mm.
The risks were always there, but now they're rightly much more tightly regulated, and that's something we take extremely seriously. It's definitely been one of the more challenging areas over the years. Then you get things like IDSE compliance, so providing the correct food tests for patients with dysphagia, ranging from level one right through to level seven. This adds another layer of complexity because it's not just about nutrition, it's about the safety and the patient's well-being.
Yeah.
After all, that's why we're here. On top of that, we're always working towards wider goals like sustainability, reducing our carbon footprint, and increasing plant-based options while still meeting financial pressures and growing income targets each year.
Okay.
One thing that's really important to us at Salisbury is our patients receive the same quality food as our staff and visitors. We don't have a separate standard. It's the same fresh in-house cooking across the board. That's something we're really proud of.
Okay. And when we went round the kitchen, you talked about like local producers. You have quite a lot of local producers.
Yes. So we currently sit around about, I think it's about 85% of the food we produce is local.
Which is quite unique, really.
It's unique. And... yeah, so we've also been accredited with Food for Life standard bronze, looking at going for silver. But again, that they come in and they audit us and make sure that we are using local produce, cooking fresh. What's the percentage? I think it's something like 75% of the food in-house has to be freshly prepared, where we're around about, I think it's 90-95%.
Wow, okay.
The next step is silver, which is where 5% of your spend, total spend, has to be organic. So we're not quite there yet. There's a lot of pressure in the NHS about, you know, and
costs,
etc. at the moment, but it is on our agenda, and it is one of the it's the next thing we need to really be get going on, really.
And congratulations in order, because obviously you've won the Digital Innovation Award for your electronic ordering system. But what was behind that? Did you just introduce that? Have you always introduced that? Or what, you know, what is that digital ordering system?
Okay, so electronic meal ordering, it's basically a digital software where patients can order their food at ward level. So at the moment, it's done by an iPad where somebody from the ward will go around and they will ask the patients what they want.
Okay, and that comes just straight down into the kitchen?
It comes straight down. So the background behind it is, I think it was 2019, there was a listeria outbreak where some patients unfortunately did die, not here. And so there was a huge outcry. The government was led on it, and there was a couple of people in the country asked to review hospital standards.
Okay.
So not just about listeria, but food safety overall.
Okay.
And so what electronic meal ordering does, because it's digital, it allows you to input all your allergens, all the ingredients, the nutritional information, and it can all go, and it's all on an iPad. And so the patients can see, and the members of staff who are taking the food orders can also see. And if you, it also allows you to block. So if a patient's allergic to, say, fish, you can type tap fish. There's a little option to.
It won't give them the option.
And then they, going forward, they can't choose a dish that contains fish.
That's a good idea, isn't it?
It is a good idea. It is a good idea, yes. So it still relies on human.
And they order like input. The day before or the morning of, or what's it? Sort of?
So the beauty of electronic meal ordering, it allows the patients to order food as close to the meal time as possible. So, and that also has a knock-on effect on things like, you know, more precise ordering of, for us. So if people do it the night before, but you never know if they've gone home, if it's a different patient, and people never remember what they've ordered. So if you go and see a patient and say, do you know what you've ordered today, they never seem to remember. But I think the fact they've got a book, so we've also incorporated a book side thing for the menu next to the patient, so, and every patient has it, and they can see the menu. So when somebody comes along with the iPad, they know what they like, and they know what they, you know, and so they can just go straight with the order, so nobody's fumbling around with the iPad for half an hour going through the menu.
It's already, so kind of simplified and streamlined things,
and,
really.
And streamlined,
So I understand that the your team of, or you have cut your carbon footprint for patient meals by 62%.
Yep.
And you reduced food waste by 19%. So they're quite, they're big numbers, really.
Yep.
How important is sustainability to you and to the trust? And does equipment play into that when you're picking equipment, or...?
It does, and you're right, those are big numbers, and we're really proud of what the team has achieved. In terms of sustainability, it's incredibly important. It's not just about the trust, it's about the bigger picture. We're only a small part of it, but if everybody plays their role, it all adds up and helps ensure we're doing the right thing for future generations to come. From a kitchen perspective, equipment plays a huge role in that. Investing in modern, efficient equipment allows us to reduce energy consumption, cut down on waste, and use fewer consumables day to day. Those efficiencies might seem small individually, but across a service of our size, they are quite significant.
Okay. And if we talk about the Wesker disc, you've got two Wesker disc flight machines.
Yep.
7.5 meters long, they're quite big. When we went and wandered through the kitchen, I saw them. How are you operating them? What are they? What are they doing? I mean, obviously, they're dishwashing, but you know, is it crockery? Is it pots and pans? Is it everything? Are they working together? You know,
that's one of the, that was one of the selling points of those machines, really.
I mean,
it's the fact that you can do it for everything. So before we had these dishwashers, we had a pot wash area. And this would be queued up with tins, with some poor member of staff in there bent over the sink,
washing up,
and really struggling to keep up. So you've got a couple of things there: staff with bad backs, bending over sinks, and etc. So and on the wet zero disc machine, you've got like a knob you just pull, or you might be pushed, but one of the things,
right.
And it puts it into pot wash mode.
Okay.
And it doesn't necessarily get things off every time for a first go. But what we found is we soak all the tins and it just goes into a big sink. Mm-hmm. And then we put it through the machine. And I'd say 90% of the stuff comes off. And anything left on there, it's just a quick knock off and then put the bit of kit back through the machine. And it's just saved. You'll never see loads and loads of tins in our kitchen, you know, and the change is significant. So in terms of manpower savings and etc., it's just been it has been a godsend.
And obviously you're committed because you bought another one 2 years ago, so
exactly
you must be happy.
I don't think you can say much more really, you know.
And things like, I don't know, you know, the features like EcoFlow or the heat recovery system,
yep.
Were they things you were involved in the purchasing, and have they had an impact? Or
yes, absolutely. So, I mean, it's not something. I mean, I will write the tender, but then we have shared input from our estates team. I don't actually see the energy consumptions and things like water and power, etc. But our estates team do, so they do have to be very much involved in the tender at the right at the start off. And we wouldn't have proceeded with the machine if it didn't meet our estates approve.
Okay. And final question for you for this part of the podcast. You're running one of the most progressive NHS catering operations, as you said yourself, 95% fresh food, which, you know, is, I've been around a few hospitals and it's not quite like that all over the country.
No.
Is there anything you wish more people outside of hospital catering understood about hospital catering and what your team do every day, or not?
For me, it's always been about the people's perception of hospital food, and it's about overcoming that. There's always been
a negative perception
of people, and I think throughout all my journey, I think one of the main things has been, you know, overcoming that, and by ensuring you have accreditation like Food for Life,
our
bronze, and you're trying to meet those things, but actually shouting about them at the same time. So things like the HEFMA award and stuff like that gets your name out there. We are terrible about not shouting enough about what we do.
All the good stuff you're doing.
Yeah, and it's about, so when a patient says, the food in the restaurant is different, for example, you know, we can say, well, the food you're getting in the restaurant is, and you know, because they sometimes come to the restaurant, is exactly what you're getting in a hospital bed.
Yeah.
You know, exactly the same standards, exactly the same quality. But obviously, you're not sat in a bed environment where other things are going on, different smells and stuff, and that can completely change your view of what you've got in front of you, you know, visually and stuff like that. So, you know, we changed over to a bulk service because we believe that is the best service you can give to a patient. It's not the easiest service.
When you say bulk service, you mean like all the food goes up to the ward,
so,
and then
it's
served at the ward.
Yeah, so we moved from a plated service where we had a conveyor belt and a plate would go down, a menu would go down and then followed by the plate, and so many people would be busy trying to keep up with the...
Yeah.
So you don't know Mrs. Jones, what she likes. Ours is, so a bulk service gives us more of a bespoke thing for the patient, so that if Mrs. Jones isn't feeling very well,
she has a small portion.
They can give, and what is a small portion? Well, I don't know, but there's sports staff who own the job. My catering staff don't know, or you know, there might be Frank, who's a rugby player, who needs, you know, double the size of food. So, you know, it's been really, it's just really important that, of course, we're still fresh in house, and I think if you ask the patient, and I've got to be careful what I say here, because there's a lot of hospitals have moved over to frozen meals, and I do understand to a certain degree why. However, you know, when it's fresh in house, if I asked you the question, what would you as a patient prefer, your first thoughts would be, I'm sure, would not be cook freeze, it would be cook fresh.
Yes.
And I think that's the initial perception, probably one of the most important things that patients want to know.
So overcoming that, is it what you're saying, it's about shouting about the good stuff you're doing, it's about sending that message, is that, would you say, is the...
I think it's key. Yeah, I think absolutely. So
we
try and do as much, we do get good support at Salisbury. We get, there's, I don't know if you've seen it on Facebook, there's a thing called Rate My Plate,
right,
and it's quite scary for everybody, you know. And people just put the photos, I think it's not always fair, but People are very defensive for sores. They look at, you know, the patients, etc. And if somebody does put something on there, they'll say, that looks all right, you know, and everybody jumps on. And,
yeah.
And I can never get involved as the catering manager, but most people say how good it is. And so going back to efficiencies and stuff, we've always had that low cost, low spend, but high satisfaction.
Okay. Well, Paul, thank you. I'm going to ask you to hang around, take a short break, and then I'm going to invite you back at the end of the podcast for a sort of group discussion. Thanks.
Thank you.
Now I'm going to invite Magnus Titson, the Managing Director of Westerdisk, who's flown over from Sweden to join us. Magnus, welcome back to Kitchen Curiosity.
Thank you very much. Glad to be back.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good, good. You flew in yesterday?
I flew in yesterday afternoon.
Right, and now travelled down to beautiful Salisbury.
Excellent.
And for listeners that missed, Magnus, is actually, you were back on season 2 in episode 16, when we actually were recording in Sweden for that one. It was a brilliant episode where we discussed about single-use plastics. Mm. We had a Michelin star chef on, and we also had someone on from Sweden Rocks, I think.
Yeah, that's correct. Sweden Rock Festival.
Worth listening to that one. Anyway, what's been happening since we last spoke?
It's happening a lot at Växjödisk, you know. So, but actually there, I would like to highlight something a little bit different to dishwashers and food service. And that is, we have a cooperation with different schools in the neighborhood.
Okay.
And one of the schools there, they came with an idea some years ago. They have a roundabout close to the school, and they wanted to build something there because we work since many years with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to build a sculpture, something there. And they went to the local government and asked for permission to do that. And these type of, let's say, permissions, they could take a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. But finally, after 2.5 years, they got the permission to build something there. And they designed something, it's more like the globe and with people, students, young people holding that globe. And they come up with the idea. Our engineers loved the idea. So they did a sculpture. They did the CAD work, mm-hmm. and the cutting in stainless steel. And now we have actually installed a 2-meter-high sculpture.
I saw that on LinkedIn.
Yeah, you saw that on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and all the children going.
Because this is something what we as an industry needs to do is to try to recruit next generation into the industry. And industry and food service in total, it's not the most fancy thing, young people might think, but you have a lot of opportunities. No matter if you go for a career as a chef or industrial worker or designer. So we want to work with students, very, let's say, young ones, but also when they go and decide what to do to go to university and so on. So,
yeah. And you made that sculpture in your
we
factory.
We made that sculpture.
But then the students came in and were involved in the process. Yes. And
so it's a real cooperation. Okay. They came up with the idea. We did the design together and we did the production. And now it's standing there.
Wow, okay.
So a fantastic type of cooperation, I would say. So that's
what was the students' feedback during the sort of process of building and
they
designing
thought it took long time to get the permission, and I said a permission could take you never know if you any time you will get the permission, but 2.5 years was okay, I would say. They were
very one of them's a future politician who can change.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it happens a lot, not only about dishwashing, but to secure the future, I think it's one of the most important thing as a managing director for a company, and the staff is one critical thing to make sure that you can recruit good staff.
Okay. So obviously we just heard from Paul talking about machines he's got installed here, two machines from from your factory, and we've been around, had a look at them in the hospital. What does it mean to you as a managing director, obviously coming from that small town in Sweden, to now come here and to see the machines in operation?
Of course, it means a lot. I can tell you that Växjödisk, the brand Växjödisk, is very much built up from two type of customers. One, schools, and the second one is hospitals.
Oh, okay.
So because in Sweden, for example, all schools, they serve warm lunch. So there is a need for every single school to have dishwashers. Also for hospitals, it's a demanding type of customer. It's a type of customer where the people, the staff, they don't leave after one shift. Mm. They start and they work for this company or this in this facility for many years. So they get experience, but they also get demanding because they know what they would like to do. Mm-hmm. They know what requirements they want to see, and if we can solve this one, if we can improve this part of the operations, it will be better. So it's a very, good type of customers to work with. People working in a school kitchen or in a hospital kitchen, they know a lot.
Okay.
So to get that feedback directly from the people, that's very important.
And that's kind of where you originate. But obviously now you're in Michelin star restaurants, hotels, I mean, you know,
yeah, the demands could be a little bit different from depending on, of course, what type of washware they take care of. But let's say, like in this hospital where you have all type of equipment, all type of washware in the same machine. So it needs to be good not only for the glasses, but also for the plates and the, pots and pans and so on. That's even more important.
Yeah, quite challenging, really.
Yeah, it's quite challenging.
So has there been any sort of major developments in Växjödisk since we last spoke? Or in the last 12 months, any new products, new markets, new thinking?
Yeah, of course, it happens a lot. And
that you can share.
Well, I can share at least what we have is supposed to launch now. And that is a new range of hood machines. We start with a pre-launch actually this spring.
Okay.
With one or two of the models. But it's a full range of hood machines with touchscreen, which is a new thing. It will be a much more modern machine. Right. That's an innovation we have been working with for a while. We also launched a new very big machine for cart washers, a tunnel type of cart washer.
Okay.
It's like a 15 meter long machine where feed carts for flight kitchens.
I was going to say for like airlines or things.
Airlines, yeah. And that type of. So it's one launch of a very, very big, unique, special machine, and one more for the normal range.
The mass market.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. And what drove behind having a touchscreen? It's just that's where technology's going, or?
Well, there are different, different reasons for that. Very often it's like the lifespan of a series of dishwashers is mainly, how long that could be is mainly dependent on the electronics. Mm-hmm. So every, 8 to 10 years, you need to do something about it. Okay. Because the electronics you need to that has moved on, and you cannot find components to the old ones. So you need to do this every 8 to 10 years, and now it was time to do something about it. But with a new touchscreen, you get a more easy for the user. You get easier for the service engineer, for example. You can do settings from this screen in a better way. So you have a number of benefits there. And then coming back to the first topic, to recruit to the workforce, younger generation, they cannot accept sometimes not having a touchscreen. It's obvious, because if you want to have younger people there, you need to be modern, so to say. Mm. So actually, that has been a demand from a lot of customers. That,
well, touchscreens everywhere, aren't they?
You have that everywhere, and your phones, your everything, and so they feel more safe with a touchscreen. So.
And I think one thing that Westcote Digital has always been known for is that ease of use.
Ease of use, yes.
Quite straightforward.
Yeah.
Easy to use.
Yeah.
So I hope you're not going to depart from that.
No, definitely not. That's in our DNA to make it intuitive and try to simplify as much as you can to make it, let's say, easy for the operator, but also for the engineers and the ones working not every day, but occasionally with a machine. That's also important.
So, looking around the European market, obviously you're managing director of the whole company from worldwide, but particularly in hospitals, institutional cases like schools and things like that, are you seeing, and I know Sweden is ahead of the curve, but we're talking about wider Europe and the world, sustainability and energy efficiency, are you seeing that still changing? And is that operators changing because they have to or they want to? Or is it a mix? You know, is that government, is it law, or is it because things have changed?
I think it's a mix, of course. And in some cases, the regulations are in the background, but the regulations will not solve the how you practically solve this. So then you need to find out a way to make it more sustainable. And we see, for example, that we have a solution for rack conveyors and for hood machines. We call it pre-rinse machine. And this is something unique, and also for flight machines, actually, but it's integrated in the machine. And this is something that we see the trend, it expands year after year. And now more than 50% of all rack conveyors sold globally do have this pre-rinse machine.
Okay.
And this is something that has happened. If you go back 5 years in time, it was not at all like that.
Yeah.
But if it's the, let's say, the operators, the legal aspects, or that the management is more aware that you save money by having this, I think it's a combination.
Yeah.
In one way
and
or another.
That pre-rinse machine, that was something that you really pioneered. Yeah. In Westcote, is that fair to say? It was kind of quite new to the market.
It's new to, it was. When we launched that first time, I think it was too early.
Yeah.
It was like, what is that about?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a learning curve, because I remember being at some of the exhibitions and people going, these Swedes have gone mad.
Exactly.
But now you're saying half the machines.
Yeah. Now even the customers become mad because, it takes time to be an ambassador for something nobody else...
to make change.
Yeah, to make a change.
Yeah.
So,
as we know, the product's proudly made in Sweden. But, you know, the world's supply chains, pressures, cost efficiency, it's increasing. It's getting harder and harder. Hmm. How does that stack up with your philosophy of manufacturing? And, you know, how are you managing that? Because, obviously, manufacturing in Sweden... it's not cheap, it's quality, you know, it's quality, labour expensive. Mm. How do you balance that out?
I would give an answer like Paul is saying before, when he talked about locally produced food. I think it's the same applies for us. We prefer the local produced. Of course, everything is not produced at Equidisc, but all sheet metal, more or less. We see a benefit of doing like that. We see a benefit of using, let's say, high quality steel, recycled steel. So of course, one could think, you can go somewhere else and buy it a little bit cheaper. But in the long run, it's not our philosophy. We don't want that to happen. So it's more a strategical decision to do that. Then, of course, if you go to the whiteware, if you take, let's say, the domestic, the public and you compare that with the equipment for food service, the volumes is not at all the same. They say if you buy a microwave oven for your home or to a restaurant, two different things.
Yeah, of course.
So of course it's not that type of price pressure.
Yeah.
And then you need to be smart. If you produce in your own factory, you need to be smart when you do it. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you can control, you have a better relation between the engineers and the designers and the production unit and the salespeople. So cost is not only, let's say, price per, component or so on. You it's the whole chain.
Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think it's fair to say that, well, and Paul sort of demonstrated that the operators are more savvy. They understand the difference between like the capital cost and then the operational cost.
Of course.
Whereas if we go back 10, 15 years ago, people were focused just on the capital.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say? That people are more focused now on the operational as well.
You look at different aspects. But then you can come to a certain frame agreement somewhere where the only thing that matters is the purchasing price.
Right.
Which is not fair because
very short-sighted
and it's really difficult to place three different brands in parallel and to evaluate because they are not different. They are not the same.
Of course. Okay. Well, good to see you again. I'm going to ask you to hang fire. We're going to take a short break and then Dave's going to join us and Paul's going to come back in as well, have a bit of a group chat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vexadisc was founded in 1972 in Sweden. From the very beginning, the company has been characterized by their strong entrepreneurial spirit, a great commitment and drive from both employees and management, and an ambition to offer world-class dishwasher solutions. Today, Vexadisc produce high-quality dishwashers and glass washers for professional kitchens, offering robust, reliable, and efficient solutions. With outstanding washing results and leading environmental credentials, Vexadisc is a natural choice for any food service operation and are proud to be part of the Alley Group. To find out more, visit vexadisc.com.
So now I'm going to invite everybody to come back into the podcast. But first of all, I'm going to have a little chat to Dave Glover, who's the UK and Ireland country manager for Vexadisc. David, great to see you again.
Yep, thank you, Rad.
For many of our listeners, David was back on season one, episode 12.
Yes.
A couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
October 24. Okay. Called that in Liverpool, if I remember.
It was good. It was interesting.
What's changed since then? What have you been up to?
It's got busier and busier and busier. In fairness to say, it sort of, we've grown the brand in the UK and Ireland quite considerably in the last few years. I mean, I'm about to be my seventh year with the company now, so that's absolutely flown by. But a lot of it is getting the name out there in the UK and people getting to trust the brand, I think, is the main thing, which is one of the purposes of today. So we've got Paul, who bought a machine 10 years ago and then 2 years ago wanted to buy another one. So we've now got two WDBSs side by side in his kitchen. And it is a case of you can't ask for much more than that kind of a client. And that's what we have across the board in England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. It's repeat business customers coming back again and again and again as they're growing. We're growing. And we seem to be getting into new markets, things like in Scotland, we're doing very well with school meals. Up there, they're having lots of new schools being built. They're closing down the old inefficient schools and building brand new state-of-the-art schools. And we're getting Vexadisc wear washers into all those schools at the moment, purely through our sustainability of the product and the minimal amount of water that's used, therefore chemicals. Basically, they are the most cost-effective machine on the market, because they're getting them independently verified in the process to do that. So they're going out to the marketplace, getting all the different brands in, and we're winning the work to do that.
Speaks volumes, really.
Absolutely. And again, even things like Ministry of Defence. We are getting so much work for the Ministry of Defence, and that's Army, Navy, and the RAF bases going in. Prison service, we're doing well with the prison service. I think people listening to this will go, what works again? So they're going to suddenly start finding out where.
And I saw recently you had a big training day at a football stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
They let you come in and use their machine, which again says quite a lot. They must be happy.
Exactly. That machine's been in there a couple of years now, but the engineers, it's a fully live machine. You know, the season's finished. So we set it up over a three-day period, 10 engineers, different engineers on each day, theory and practical. So they've got full access to the machine. So again, it's now like a brand new machine again, almost, because they've changed in the process of the training is new components, service kits and all these different things. So it's very much hands-on, and they can actually see what's worn within that two-year period rather than just a brand new machine in a warehouse taking the side off and going, you change this and you change that. It's 2 years old and things do start to wear. Mm. And you do have to service this equipment just like a car would, you know, in a stadium situation. It gets real hard duty work, just like the hospitals. I mean, hospitals even worse because it's 24/7.
Mm.
You know, they really do get a thrashing. But like Paul says, they stand up to what it needs to do. Yes, they need components and servicing and all these things, like any piece of equipment, but we will get that 15 to 20 years out of the piece of equipment to do that. Again, just recently, another hospital, we had the Isle of Wight Hospital. They replaced their existing 15-year-old machine with another Vacuadisc. So it was a like-for-like, straight swap. Everybody else tendered for the work, every other manufacturer, but they decided, no, that's what we want. We want a Vacuadisc again. So we do sort of get repeat business. Don't get it all the time. You know, it's sort of a contract caterer may go in because they have a preferred deal and partner, and it goes in, but you go, fine, you just move on to the next deal.
Yeah, of course.
If you like. And, yeah, we're doing well, you know. Cool. You always want more, you know. It's sort of, the boss is here, so we've all got
targets.
We've all got targets, and we all push as hard as we can. Again, I'm UK and Ireland, so next week I'm in Ireland again. There's lots of projects on the go in Ireland at the moment, and we're doing extremely well in Ireland, just the same as we are in the UK. So yeah, it's all go, as I would say.
So question for you, and obviously for Magnus, really. You've recently launched the new DW10S pot wash machine.
Yep.
No granules. So it's a bit of a departure from what was before. Are you still doing granule machines?
Yes, we are.
Okay, this is just an add-on.
That's add-on, and we are still selling a good amounts of them. I won't name the prison, but we've just had an order for a granular machine. In a prison. So,
and your machine's this machine's 98% recycled stainless steel.
Hmm.
Why have you done this? Why have you gone for this new machine with no granules? What's the thought behind it?
Well, I think there is a debate ongoing about, let's say, microplastics in general. And in some countries, some markets, this is more critical than in other ones. So we try to have something we call granule-free pot washing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an alternative. We have a portfolio of granule machines, of course.
Okay.
We have another portfolio of different type of machines, where the 10S is one of them, which is suitable for if you don't want to have a granule machine. So it's an option you can take. But over time, I think the debate about microplastics will be even worse. So in some years, I think that because it's microplastics, no matter what type of granules you use, it is microplastics.
Yeah.
And if you want to get rid of that, you need to find another solution.
Yes, so kind of, it was market-driven, really.
It's a combination, because in some countries you're not allowed to use this microplastics. And then let's say, group of companies, they say, we will stay out of that. So it's a strategic decision from their side.
Mm-hmm.
You find a lot of different combinations, how they... the thinking about this. So we would like to have two options.
Yeah. And it's going down very well in the marketplace. So we tend to sell them alongside a wrap machine, for instance. So I've got schools, supermarkets. So they will have a single tank rack machine, so our WD 151. And then for the pots and pans, they will have the WD-10S side by side doing it what it needs to do. And in fairness, the business we've got so far, it's replacing existing, but then ours is going in and they are saying how much better it is.
Okay.
And again, I'm getting repeat business off of that now.
Because technology's moved on as well.
And it's quieter. One of the big things that people are saying, how quiet it is, well, that is through the insulation. So if something's well insulated, it's going to maintain the heat, therefore the elements don't kick in as much, therefore it uses less power. So it's these small little things that we constantly do, and you can have our EcoFlow heat recovery as an option as well on the unit. So it's a very cost-effective piece of equipment for doing the pans, but you can also put your plates through as well. Mm. So if a wrap machine goes down or a hood machine, you can use that as the backup as well. So it's gone down extremely well in the marketplace at the moment.
So, and Paul, from your perspective, you know, obviously hospital dishwashing, ware washing environment, is there some sort of like non-negotiables for you that you expect? Because obviously it's different to a hotel or restaurant, isn't it, really? Like in hygiene standards. I'm thinking about hygiene or disinfectant. Is there some things that you think, well, I've got to have this, or is there things that you want that you haven't got yet in the market? I don't know.
Obviously, being in a hospital, it's there is that heat of killing bacteria and stuff that possibly could come back from the wards, etc. And so I know some machines out there go for thermo disinfection machines, which are much more hotter, etc. But once that plate comes off the end of the machine, somebody touches it, and it's counterproductive, really. So, you know, and I think for us, it was more about, it still does it. It still gets the high temperature, the rinse end and stuff like that. So and plus the chemicals kill the bacteria anyway. But yeah, I think it's more about the build quality and the fact that they're the must-haves. It's the build quality and maintenance. You know, we can't go without a machine for long. If that machine goes down, then we're on to disposables. The quality of service goes down. You can imagine you're a patient, you get it on a paper plate, you know, which we've had in the past, but not with these machines. So we have had that.
Okay.
So I think reliability is the main thing here.
I think it's also the actual cost of repair as well. We're very competitive in the marketplace for elements and things, spare parts. So a lot of things become basically replaced because they were too expensive to repair. Where a Vacuadisc, it's not. You change the components, machine's back up and running, but it wasn't the price of a new machine, which a lot of other manufacturers can get to that level now of the running of the machine. And there is a running cost of yearly maintenance and these components that need changing, which is ongoing and it happens. But some of the bills that some people get, and that's why they end up buying a new machine, because it was beyond economical repair for that exact reason. One of the MOD sites I'm doing at the moment, what's coming out is, I'll use the word, German brands. Mm-hmm. It's only 5 years old, but it's coming out because it's beyond economical repair. The repair bills to fix it are that big, it's just not worth it. It should get fixed, but it can't because what they're charging to get it fixed. So it's we're getting a Vapodisc is going in and a brand new machine. So yeah, definitely one of the things.
I just to touch on briefly, I don't want to go on too much about it because we covered it quite extensively before, but about sustainability, sustainability challenge, if you like. And obviously hospitals are under enormous pressure to cut costs and cut carbon at the same time, which kind of don't always work hand in hand. Is there more that manufacturers could be doing to work with you as an operator, do you think? Or, you know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, as like I said, there is quite an intensive tender process right at the beginning. It's in the NHS, public money. You can't just go off and just, you know, make a decision. I like that machine, I'll go off and buy it. You know, there's a lot of people involved. So, you know, from our States team who do have to look after all the efficiencies and stuff, I said earlier, you know, it's key for them to make sure. And it's put out quite a lot. You know, it is when any tender goes forward, they always say, you know, make sure you're buying something that is efficient, it meets this, and it'll go through everybody, all the heads and stuff, to make sure that we are doing what they say that we're supposed to be doing.
So it's having that information available, really, so you know
is,
what,
yeah.
what
so is it efficient. Is, so one of the things we do, we just ask the suppliers to provide all the efficiencies, all the ratings, and
And do you find that, obviously, I mean, you're here with Escalis today, but do you get different levels of support from different manufacturers? I guess some manufacturers are good at it and some aren't. Is that fair?
Do you know what? I feel it's like, for Dave's point of view, I think, you know, they will probably lean on the manufacturer if I don't get what I want. So there will be a little bit of, you know, I'll come to Dave and say, Dave, he hasn't, you know, I'll get on to them.
Yeah.
You know, so and that's what another thing I quite like. It's not kind of like where you bought our machine and you know, see you later. It's kind of, you know, there is that kind of ongoing kind of support, you know, and then they'll recommend, so we'll try these people instead, you know. So but we've been really good. The people installed the machines are, you know, really good. The company who's been looking after us, they have that old school customer service, which I like, because, you know, a lot of companies say, well, you haven't raised the docket, we're not going to deal with that, even though we're here for another problem. You've got to raise another docket and they'll come up. But a lot of the service we've had is, you know, well, we'll have a look while we're here, sort of thing. You know, still get billed for it, but at the end of the day,
in the same visit, wasn't it?
They care about that, they understand it, and they care about that it's customer service, It's old school, I'd say. You know, I'd say old school, which sadly, a lot of places it doesn't exist so much.
So what you kind of, the relationship between you and the manufacturer is just as important as between you and the engineers.
Absolutely.
Or the distributor.
Absolutely, and, yes.
Yeah, I guess that's probably why you kept with
them. It is. I think it's so easy. If you don't look after the equipment, and it's so easy for it to slip, and, you know, and the thing is, you can be complacent because they are really reliable. So if somebody hasn't come in and serviced it for a while, you think, you know, it hasn't broken down. You know, it hasn't broken down. And so, well, when was the last service? So then you get, you know, but luckily it's been really good. So they have been looked after. So.
Okay. And Dave, from your perspective, obviously you in the UK network, spare parts through First Choice and Direct, or what's
Parts Town.
Parts Town now, actually.
It's Parts Town, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely old. And then you use different service companies, I think, for...
That's it. So we only supply through the dealer network.
Okay.
So we've got our core dealers, and then we have the dealers that appear when a tender document appears. Mm-hmm. Everybody comes out of... Because that's the type of business that they do.
Just call it open market in that one.
It is. But again, it's very much that, a bit like Paul just said, there's that old-fashioned customer service. I'm dealing with all of it and getting on with it, and it is all about getting back to the customer, giving the information that they need, and it is almost that cradle to grave sort of situation. I've dealt with it all the way through. Hmm. And I take it personally to make sure that the machine is looked after, the customer is looked after. And sometimes you think the machine's gone wrong, but it hasn't. There's been a bit of an error, and I will then get out one of the service partners to do a retrain on it for that little bit of customer service. It's not quite right, but let's get a retrain done on it. I mean, one of the things that the factory's done recently, all the machines now go out with a QR code, get your mobile phone, go to that, and it takes you to training videos. So they can recap themselves, and we integrate that into the training session, that all the staff know how to go onto that QR code and look at those training videos for that little recap. Again, this is hospitality. In the summer months, you have lots of casual labour coming in.
Changing.
They don't know it, but if they know to just have a look at that QR code, how do we turn on the machine? How do we clear it down? How do we clean it? All these different things. It all helps those small things to keep the machine up and running.
And Magnus, you know, you travel around the world. Is the UK different for warewashing in hospitals than, say, Sweden or Saudi Arabia or I don't know where else in the world?
It's very hard to say that one market differs from the other. It's more that one type of customer could differ from each other.
But okay.
I would say if you find all type of customers in all type of markets. You have those ones that change staff more or less every week, for example. Then it's very hard to get any good development in your dishwashing area. But then you have customers where the staff stays for a long time. They take care about the machinery and so on. And you find them in any type of country. So I would say the market as such, I don't think that's big. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to move on. We're coming to near the end of the podcast. We're going to move on to a bit of a quick fire round, which is more a fun thing, more a bit more relaxed, but you can still talk about things. And it's try to make it quick, so we'll move around short answers if you can. And I'll start with you, Paul, if you don't mind. If you weren't in this industry, what industry would you be in?
That's a difficult question, really. I mean, I suppose, like it says, when I left college, I did catering, but then I was got onto the building sites and stuff. It was quick cash and stuff like that.
Do you do some handiwork and building at home, do you? And
I'd say some things, yes, although I can't hang a picture straight very well, so all my pictures tend to be like that. But I like to think I'm okay. My wife might have a different opinion, but
And Dave?
I was wanting to be a policeman.
Okay.
I had two uncles that were both in the police.
Right.
So
I see that. He looks a bit like a policeman, doesn't he?
Yeah. Blood. Yeah.
Worried now.
Love of the plod. Because I'm actually, mum's side of the family is Northern Ireland.
Okay.
So I had an uncle there. And on the other side, we also had in Birmingham, who was a police officer there, so it was always going to be that. And get everybody up, end up being a chef. I started washing up dishes, I think, on one of my little podcasts. I actually did a little video showing the first place I got a job washing dishes. It's like I've gone full circle from first job washing, and hopefully this should be my last job, fingers crossed. don't screw it up. It's and now selling into the doing the whole bit, but it was being a policeman was the original bit.
And Magnus, for you?
Well, I'm a pure engineer. I like engineering. Okay. I that has been all the time my preference. Like to build things. I like to construct things. I like so anything in that type of business. My father worked with constructions, more buildings and so on. So I decided I go for machinery instead. It's more fun. It becomes some kind of moving parts. If it's a construction and it starts to move, perhaps it should be like an earthquake or something. But so I preferred something more funnier, so machinery. And I think, it's a...
You stay with engineering.
Yeah, I stay with the engineering, even if I don't do very much engineering today in my profession. But
you still understand it.
Yeah.
And to the next question, Paul, best meal you've ever eaten anywhere in the world?
Springs Restaurant it was.
You can't say here.
I can't say here. God, do you know what? I do love food.
Mm.
And I'm one of those people who say, what's your favourite dish? And if it's been made well, it's that dish at that time.
Okay.
You know, so if it's a really nice dish and the steaks with a nice sauce has been cooked absolutely, then that would be my favourite. I'll be like, God, this is the favourite, best meal I've ever had.
Yeah.
And people say, well, you said it was the other thing. And I'm like, but okay. You know what? Right now, that's the best meal I've ever had. You know,
like that.
Yeah.
Dave?
Quite similar from the chefy background. I think it depends on, you could have your best Indian, your best Chinese, your best English, Italian, whatever it may be. But I think sometimes it's where you are. Now, one of the favourite places I like is in London, Fenchurch restaurant on top of the walkie-talkie.
Mm.
But I think it's more, you literally up on the top looking out, the experience up there, and you just sort of, the service and everything that's involved. Because sometimes the food could be fantastic, but if the service isn't great, it then distracts. Really, but sometimes you can have mediocre food, but the service is absolutely outstanding. It actually lifts the food because of the whole, I think it's the whole experience at times you go to.
I fully agree with you, David, about the experience around the service. It's a lot of circumstances, who you eat together with and so on. So for me, I'm a hunter, so I like go out in the forest and do. And if you have any type of meal when you're in that circumstances, it's fantastic. Then I enjoy pasta meals, so I have a very good example when we went to Malta with the family some years ago, and my family wanted to go to a very fancy pasta restaurant there, and I said, we don't go there because it's empty with people, so why go to a restaurant even if it looks nice? So we went to another one, a small one, fantastic pasta, and I probably learned them a little bit that you go where the locals go.
Yeah, definitely. So hard one for you, Magnus, but let's see if you can give the answer. In one word, Paul, how would you describe the UK hospitality sector right now? Just give me one word.
Pressure.
Turmoil.
From your outside looking in, can you give us a word?
I would say it's not only UK, but transformation.
Transformation. Okay. So what, Paul, you said pressure.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
I think there's a lot of pressures. Especially in the NHS, you know, you've got so many more targets, and we have obviously a very different type of customer that we have to. So we have the public, but we also have the patients. You know, and it's just costs, isn't it? Food costs are going through the roof, and people's expectations of what they want to pay is very different. You go to a fish and chip shop, you know, what you're paying for fish, people don't realise how much food costs have gone through the roof. It's not a cheap meal anymore. And it probably shouldn't be, because it's a good product, isn't it?
Mm.
Nice bit of fish. But I think that the customer's expectation and costs are a big challenge, and people are under a lot of pressure to deliver that. But people will pay the money if the food's good.
Yeah.
And the service is good.
So value is not necessarily about cheap, it's about quality.
Definitely.
And then if there was one piece of equipment in your kitchen that you could keep, but the rest of it all had to go, but you can't say dishwasher, what would you keep?
Well, it'd be ovens.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
The rationale ovens that do everything, basically.
Yeah. Well, to me, to not saying a dishwasher, it's more or less that I can look in my contract. Am I allowed to say anything else? But then I take something completely different. You know, in Sweden, it's so much about potatoes. So a potato peeler I would like to keep, because otherwise it would be extremely difficult.
Don't know how you're going to cook them, but you certainly can peel them.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
I think for me, it's a sharp knife.
Yeah.
Because you can make fire, you can cook anything on anything, but you need that sharp instrument to be able to prep it all up from the beginning. I think with a chefy background, you can always create something out of nothing.
Yeah. Okay. And I'll ask you all, if there was one piece of advice you'd give your younger self when you first started your career, what would it be?
Mine was definitely...
Don't become a chef.
No,
I'm joking.
I think mine was don't work as hard as what I did.
Yeah, yeah.
I think back then, I easily, as a commy chef, worked 100 hours a week.
Yeah, yeah.
It was work hard, but boy, did I play hard as well. And it was all good fun, but I think I should have concentrated a little bit more on some of the future things rather than just the, I've done a 16, 18-hour shift and now I'm going out and getting exceedingly drunk.
Yeah.
And each day rolls into another one. And I think it was my early 20s until the penny dropped of, I need to stop doing this.
Mm.
And then literally, I think I then fell into the management side of things. Then my life changed. While I was chefing, it was, I mean, in fairness, I travelled a lot in
yeah.
my younger days, literally all over the world, different holidays. I was earning good money.
Mm. But working hard.
It all just went working too hard. And then, yeah, I think it's sometimes slow down.
Hmm.
Look at the big picture and move forward.
Magnus?
For me, I think be yourself and always sit calm in the boat. That is something that I always try to be because... quite often you see people rushing in different directions and you don't know really, but sit calm and wait and see. That is my recommendation. And I like stick to that.
Nice advice. Paul?
You know, I think it's been difficult. I just, you know, it's about not having any regrets, isn't it? You know, about the decisions you make. If you've made the wrong decisions, then hopefully you learn from them and you move on. So, and you become a better person. You don't make the same mistakes again. So, yeah, I think for me, there's no regrets. And you're right, it's about being calm and not to worry and overstress things because, you know, it's easier said than done. But stress can be, you know, a factor in any kind of job, really.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to pressure, isn't it?
Okay, well, brilliant. Thank you so much. Some great answers there. Paul, Magnus, David, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Radford.
Thank you.
Paul, it's been a masterclass in hospital catering. It's the first time I've recorded in a hospital, so thank you for that. And obviously your passion for, you know, fresh food, local produce, it comes through. So hopefully people listening to it will take a slightly different view of hospital food.
Thank you very much.
Be positive.
Thank
you. And Magnus, it's always been a pleasure having you. Thank you for sponsoring this podcast and for flying in
from
Sweden. I hope you enjoy your visit here and go and have a look at the iconic cathedral this evening. And Dave, also, thank you. So if you want to find out more about Weskadish range of warewashing solutions, the flight machines, dishwashers, etc., you can visit their website, which is weskadisk.com, which is WEXIO disk.com, where you can find out more about their products for your catering operation. Well, that concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. Thank you for listening. If you've got time, please subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Amazon Music. As you might have seen online, we've now reached in the last 90 days over 95,000 listeners and 155 complete for the series or for the seasons. So thank you for listening and sharing the podcast and I hope you continue to tune in. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is a Sound Rebel production.